か。
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the December 6th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Our starting line for Monday's show is African Athletics. The Kenyans, Lawrence Chirono and Nancy Jelagat, won the men's and women's titles Sunday at the Valencia Marathon in Spain. Chirono had a winning time of 2 hours, 5 minutes, and 12 seconds. In a sprint finish, he held off the Ethiopian Deso Chalu and fellow Kenyan Philemon Kacharan, who finished a close second and third, respectively. The 33-year-old Chirono finished fourth overall in this year's Olympic men's marathon in Sapporo, Japan. His win in Valencia comes after marathon victories in Chicago and Boston in 2019, in Amsterdam in 2018 and 2017, in Honolulu in 2017, in Prague in 2016, and in Seville, Spain in 2015. Speaking in Valencia, Spain, after his victory Sunday, Lawrence Chirono had this to say.
This year, it was my day because last year I was almost winning, but I lost at last meters. That was unfortunate for me. But today, after going to Olympics and I lost again in some few meters, but today I managed to win this race, and I am happy of it. We start the race. It was a good one, despite the fact that we had a lot of wind. So it was not easy for us to run faster this day, like last year, because last year the wind was a little, but today there was a lot of wind.
That's Lawrence Chirono, the men's winner of a windy Valencia Marathon in Spain. Another Kenyan, Nancy Jelagat, was the women's winner in Valencia. She crossed the finish line in 2 hours, 19 minutes, and 31 seconds for her first marathon victory. Elsewhere in African athletics, runners from Ethiopia and Kenya won the men's and women's titles at this year's London Marathon. In this Sunny Side of Sports highlight for 2021, let's listen to the post-race report from the energetic Andy Edwards in the British capital. Sporty greetings, Andy.
Sporty greetings, Sunny. The women's race should rightly take centre stage in any reflection of a great day for the marathon, as the epic event returned for its 41st edition to the streets of London. The weather was much the same as for the first edition, back in March 1981. Overcast, not much wind, and a temperature of 13 degrees centigrade at the start. This was a women-only race, starting half an hour before the elite men. Three women runners had pacemaking duties and went off at a tempo which pointed to an attack on Mary Keitany's women-only world record for the marathon of 2:17:01. But the real racers, perhaps wisely, held back, though their pace was still threatening to go under 2 hours 18. Among them was the Olympic silver medalist and world record holder Brigitte Kosgei of Kenya. But she began to struggle after halfway, reached in 68 minutes 51. Kosgei was in a leading group of five at 30 kilometres, which also comprised Jocelyn Chepkosgei, the Israeli Lorna Salpeter, and two Ethiopians, Degitu Azimaror and Ashete Bekere. But 5 kilometres later, Brigitte Kosgei began to drift off the pace, and shortly before 35 kilometres, Jocelyn Chepkosgei attacked, quickly building an 8-second lead over Azimaror. She was in the clear and heading for victory, and her time of 2 hours 17 minutes 43 was the 7th fastest of all time. Degitu Azimarol was runner-up, also running a PB with 2:17.58, as did Ashete Bekere in third with 2:18.18. Brigitte Koskay, aiming for her third London title in succession, finished fourth, almost a minute behind the winner. Unlike Koskay, and quite a few in both women's and men's races, Jocelyn Chepkoskay wasn't selected for the Olympics. She'd had a strong build-up, winning the Berlin Half Marathon 6 weeks before London, and having won the New York Marathon 2 years ago, could recognise the promising signs.
When I was training, I was feeling that the improvement of the training was much more than the previous race of Valencia. So I was thinking might be I'll improve my BB throughout. I see throughout the training, I was in a correct shape.
The men's race also had drama, as Ethiopia's Cisse Lema achieved the biggest win of his career. He went clear at 35 kilometres, so often the decisive point in the marathon, having lurked at the back of what became a lead pack of five men till then. The leading group had gone through halfway in 61 minutes 25, fast but not exceedingly so by modern standards, with perhaps Eliud Kipchoge's course record of 2:02.37 set 2 years ago as a target. In the latter stages, the Kenyan, Vincent Kipchumba, second behind Kipchoge here in 2019, led, but couldn't match Lema's attack. Cisse Lema won in 2 hours, 4 minutes and 1 second. Kipchumba, runner-up again, was 27 seconds behind. And Mozinet Geremew of Ethiopia finished third, 40 seconds behind the winner. Vincent Kipchumba was not downhearted with his performance, running a personal best of 2:04.28.
The secret also only is to be self-disciplined, also to focus in training, and that's also the only thing to make it happen like the way I do.
Kipchumba also paid tribute to the world record holder, Eliud Kipchoge, and to being in the same training group as the great man, saying how much he gains from the experience.
Yeah, I'm very happy to represent my country, Kenya, when Eliud is not here. And also I wish I could have Eliud here. For me, it's also a privilege to me, because I'm still learning from him.
The London Marathon organisers had worked mightily to ensure a safe event for the elite and mass runners alike. The pandemic still casts a shadow, however. One of the elite Ethiopians, Kinde Atanor, tested positive for COVID on the eve of the race. He'd been in contact with the winner. Though Cisse Lema tested negative, it was thought best that he missed the victory ceremony and returned to the athlete's hotel without doing media interviews as a precaution. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Andy Edwards in London.
Thanks, Andy.
Sport greetings, everyone. This is Falilat Ogukoya, Olympic silver and bronze medalist. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sport on Voice of America. Please continue to stay safe and avoid contracting COVID-19.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay at home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Prince Nesta joins us once again for a look at the weekend highlights in the major European club football leagues. Sporty greetings, Prince.
Sporty greetings to you too, Sonny. Belgian striker of Kenyan descent Divo Origi hit Alaska Spoinas. Liverpool beat Wolverhampton Wanderers by a 1-0 at the Molineux Stadium. The 26-year-old has previously played a pivotal role in Liverpool's quest for glory, scoring one of the match-winning goals against Tottenham during the 2019 Champions League finals. Here's Liverpool boss Jurgen Klopp after the Reds' dramatic victory over Wolverhampton Wanderers.
We missed massive chances, incredible. I think we stand here all and feel the wind. So all the crosses who came in where we think should be in. Obviously, it was difficult to judge for the players. So in the end, they could defend it somehow. Then we obviously missed a massive chance with Diogo. Yeah, but then you have to stay in the game, and that's what we did. We changed offensively. We brought Oxley and Divock, obviously, and in the end it worked out, and I'm really happy about that.
Does Liverpool manager Jurgen Klopp's reaction after his team secured a memorable win against Wolves? DR Congolese descent Arthur Masuaku scored the winning goal as West Ham twice came from behind to beat Chelsea 3-1 at the London Stadium. Brazilian footballer Thiago Silva gave the Blues the lead in the first half before Manuel Lanzini equalized for the Hammers from the penalty spot. English playmaker Mason Mount scored Chelsea's second on the stroke of halftime. Jared Bowen equalized for West Ham before Masuaku's sensational winner sealed the deal. West Ham are currently fourth in the table with 27 points, 6 points behind the Blues. Here's Chelsea's boss, Thomas Tuchel, after his team's dramatic loss to their London rivals.
Yeah, well, this is a goal that, happens. it happens just because it happens. There are no mistakes in it or whatever. It's just a freak goal. The problem is that it's the winner. Normally it should be the equalizer, but we had too many mistakes before in our game because the performance was okay. I think we can win with this performance. We created half chances. We were in control. We were like grew into the game better and better. We had the lead twice, but overall we did too many individual mistakes again today, like in Watford where we gave a goal away, like against Man United where we gave a goal away. If you do this for three consecutive games, you cannot expect always to get a result.
There is Chelsea boss Thomas Tuchel's insightful interview after his team's shock Premier League defeat to West Ham. Goals from English striker of Jamaican descent Raheem Sterling and Bernardo Silva powered Manchester City to a 3-1 win against Watford at Vicarage Road as the defending champions moved to the top of the Premier League for the first time this season, much to their manager Pep Guardiola's delight.
Great victory, again, another good performance, continue the level we have done this last 2 months, and we are playing really well, and the important is create the chances we have done, and one day this type of player with the quality they have, they will score a goal. So, and now is the momentum from Bernardo, another day will come from Phil, another came from Rush, from Riyad, from the other ones. The important is the way we are playing. This is the most important thing. So results and convert actions or not is a little bit random, but the way we are playing, the consistency is the most important thing that helps us to be a stable team, and that's why we are already, I don't know how many, 6-7 games winning in a row. This is the point.
City's hometown rivals Manchester United also secured a 1-0 win over Crystal Palace thanks to Brazilian defender Fred's goal in the second half. Newly appointed Red Devils boss Ralf Rangnick had this to say after getting off to the perfect start in the English Premier League.
I'm very happy with the way that the team performed, the way they played, especially the first half hour was exceptional, I thought. Extreme high intensity and tempo. The only thing that was missing in that period of the game was the 1 or 2-0. But the way the team defended as a team, the whole game, we had control on the game, so I'm very happy with the game, the performance, but also with the result. Clean sheet, that's the most important part. This is the things that we have to improve on. We need to produce clean sheets, we need to have and get control on the game. And with only one training session, or it was not even a full training session, what they did, what they showed today, was more than I expected, to be honest.
That's Manchester United boss Ralf Rangnick speaking after enjoying a winning start to his tenure at Old Trafford. Girls from Lucas Moura, Davidson Sanchez and Son Heung-min helped Tottenham Hotspur secure a 3-0 win over Norwich City, lifting them into 5th place with 25 points from 14 matches. 7th place Arsenal visit Goodison Park to play against Everton, who could seal 3 successive Premier League wins against Arsenal for the first time since 1986. However, I'm pretty sure Ghana's fans will be thrilled to hear that their Gabonese talismanic striker Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang has scored 8 goals out of 9 Premier League games played on Mondays. Therefore, keeping up with that tradition will boost Arsenal's chances towards securing a victory. Moving on to the French League, Jorginho Wijnaldum's goal in the injury time allowed PSG to snatch a 1-1 draw against Lens in the French League in a match that was played in Lens, France. It is the Parisians' second consecutive draw, consequently extending their lead to 11 points from second place Rennes, who hammered Saint-Etienne 5-0, thanks to Martin Terrier's hat-trick. Ivan Mekun and French footballer of Nigerian descent Leslie Ugochukwu. Third place Marseille was turned 2-1 at home by Brest, while Monaco secured a 4-0 win against Metz, thanks to goals from French footballer of Senegalese descent Sofiane Diop, Kevin Volland, Portuguese footballer of Cape Verdean descent Gelson Martins, and French footballer of Tunisian descent Wissam Ben Yedder. Monaco are currently undefeated in their last 5 games in the French league. Lyon also under 2-2 draw against Bordeaux, while Canadian footballer of Haitian descent Jonathan Davids and Jimmy Girardin also recorded their names on the score sheet as Lille cruised to a 2-1 win over Troyes. Finally, in La Liga, Real Madrid extended their lead at the top of La Liga to 8 points after securing a 2-0 victory against Real Sociedad, courtesy of goals from Brazilian sensation Vinicius Jr. and Jovic's header from a corner. Lucas Ocampos netted the sole goal as Sevilla under 1-0 win against Villarreal, while Barcelona suffered a 1-0 defeat to Real Betis at Camp Nou. Atletico Madrid also slipped to a shock 2-0 defeat at the hands of Mallorca. Reporting for the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm Prince Nestor.
Thanks, Prince. Europe's top football clubs are raising concerns about releasing their African players to compete in the Africa Cup of Nations tournament, which kicks off January 9th in Cameroon. The European Club Association has expressed its deep concerns about player safety following the emergence of the Omicron variant of coronavirus. It's led to countries reintroducing travel bans and restrictions, and it may lead to a fresh dispute over whether players should be released for international duty. For reaction, Iron Mike Mbonye spoke with African football analyst Emmanuel Okara.
With regard to the concern being raised by European football clubs over the loss of their players to the upcoming African Cup of Nations from sometime in January to sometime in February, I won't in any way blame them because they have every right to complain. Whether we like it or not, African players have become invaluable assets to these club sides, so that it's not only one club side that has been affected. It cuts across Europe, from England to Germany to France to Ukraine to France. Players would have to honor the call by their national teams to feature in quotes, Africa's World Cup. Unfortunately for the club side, this tournament is coming in January, a very crucial stage when they are, participating in several domestic competitions and they need every of their assets at hand. But unfortunately for them, the AFCON, which is recognized by FIFA, would have to, take its course on them. Whether they like it or not, they just have to release these players. Their fear is not only will they lose the players, will the players come back fit? Will they not come back with injuries? Anyway, the days ahead will tell.
If the European clubs have their way and African players are not part of AFCON, what will be the implication?
The European club sides can never have their way because the African Cup of Nations is recognized by FIFA and they are duty-bound, being members of FIFA, to release these players. Maybe sometime in future, they might get CAF to align the African Cup of Nations, you know, to be in line with that of UEFA, so that it will be every 4 years. And if not even in that four-year span, at least let it be during summer. But whether you like it or not, it's like a two-edged sword. Even if it's in summer, it will affect their preseason. But they just have to swallow the humble pie and accept, you know, the current situation. They have enough of a lot of players at their hand, but I agree that players like Mohamed Salah, Sadio Mane, Kalidou Koulibaly are the live wire of their teams and so on. But they just have to, you know, honor the invitation by their national team. And every African player wants to participate in the AFCON. Well, the way it is, there's nothing European club side can do. They just have to accept things the way they are until something happens in the not-too-distant future.
Do you think FIFA has a role to play on the fate of African players in Europe being part of AFCON?
Of course, FIFA is the number one arbiter in this matter between UEFA and CAF. Until FIFA says otherwise, UEFA is duty-bound to obey, whether willingly or grudgingly. They just have to accept it. It's the way things are. There's nothing that can be done for now. But I believe there might be talks in the pipeline, and depending when a final decision is made on that matter, AFCON holds.
That's African football analyst Emmanuel Okara. And Emmanuel spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Lagos, Nigeria. Just ahead, Samson Omale will have an update on the Confederation of African Football's Confederation Cup tournament.
Record three-time champions CS Sfaxien of Tunisia, 2020 champions RS Bakane of Morocco, Algeria's JS Saoura, and Zambia's Zanaco all qualified for the group stage of the 2021-2022 Total CAF Confederations Cup. The quartet completed a 14-team park in the mini-league stage, with the last two seats to be determined between Al-Ittihad of Libya against Enyimba of Nigeria when they meet, and JS Kabylie when they confront Oyo Leopards from Eswatini. Look at some of the fixtures reveals some interesting encounters. Like in Bakar, Algeria's JS Samoura produced an amazing comeback to beat Ghana's Hearts of Oak 4-0 and reached the group stage winning 4-2 on aggregate. In Bamako, Mali's Binga couldn't find a similar comeback as they fell short to beat Zanaco 2-0, leaving the Zambians to reach the group stage winning 3-2 on aggregate. In all the matches, three-time Confederations Cup champions CS Sfaxien needed a lone goal to beat Kenya's Tosca and reached the group stage winning 1-0 on aggregate, while Morocco's RS Bakane survived an early scare to reach the group stage, beating Rwanda's APR 2-1 on the night and in aggregate. Elsewhere, Egypt's duo of Pyramid FC and Al Masry also made it through to the group stage after two home 1-0 wins in Cairo and Alexandria, respectively, on Sunday. Meanwhile, in Benghazi, there was penalty joy for Ahlil Tripoli as they joined the group stage, beaten Stade Malien on shootout.
Thanks, Samson. That's Samson Omale. I encourage our Sunny Side of Sports listeners to follow me on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. Turning to tennis, Russia is celebrating its third Davis Cup title and first in 15 years. World number two Daniel Medvedev defeated Croatia's Marin Cilic 7-6 and 6-2 in Madrid, Spain on Sunday to give Russia an unbeatable 2-0 lead. The Davis Cup trophy caps a great year for Medvedev, who won his first major singles title at the U.S. Open in September.
Feels amazing, but I'm more happy for the team than for myself. I mean, we have an amazing team, amazing atmosphere, and I'm just happy to be part of this team and being able to bring the points that we need. And it was a pretty amazing 2 weeks, because never easy to come here at the end of the season, but a few of the best weeks of my career, and I'm really happy again for the team more than for myself.
Meanwhile, there will be more host cities and fewer nations playing in the Davis Cup tennis finals next season. The International Tennis Federation and the Cosmos Tennis Group which is behind the Davis Cup competition, say four cities will host the group stage beginning in 2022, and another venue will host the knockout round. Three cities hosted the event this year. As I mentioned, the Spanish city of Madrid hosted the Davis Cup final. There will be 16 teams at the 2022 Davis Cup finals, down from 18 this year. More tennis news. It's still not clear whether world number one Novak Djokovic will defend his Australian Open title next month. Tournament organizers have issued a mandate that requires all players to be fully vaccinated against the coronavirus. But last month, Djokovic's father said his son is unlikely to participate in a season-opening Grand Slam event or disclose his vaccination status. VOA's Gwen Uten has more. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. In October, Victorian Premier Daniel Andrews announced that his government will not allow unvaccinated players to compete in January's Australian Open. And late last month, tournament organizers confirmed that all players must be vaccinated against COVID-19 to compete in the first Grand Slam of the year. But according to Sergen Djokovic, father of Novak Djokovic, the world number one will likely skip the upcoming tournament if the vaccine mandate is not relaxed. Speaking in Serbian for an interview with Preva TV, the elder Djokovic said any decision his son makes about his vaccination status is both private and personal. Sergeant Djokovic says, in part, everyone has the right to decide of one's own health and whether one will follow this or that rule. Whether Novak is vaccinated or not is his exclusive and personal right, and whether he makes that public or not is his personal decision. Novak has not yet disclosed whether or not he has received the COVID vaccine, but his father adds Tennis Australia's stance on the vaccine mandate is the equivalent to blackmail. Sergeant Djokovic says whether or not Novak competes depends on whether or not organizers want the 9-times winner of the tournament to travel to Australia. He'd like to go with all his heart because he's an athlete, but whether that happens, I really don't know. He concludes, under these conditions, under these blackmails and the way this is being handled, probably not. In November, Australian Open tournament director Craig Tiley expressed his confidence that Djokovic would travel to Australia not only to defend his title, but to play for a record-breaking 21st Grand Slam trophy. And Tiley told reporters he has spoken to the Djokovic team to reemphasize that the vaccine mandate applies to everyone, not just the athletes.
We have been speaking to Novak Djokovic's team, and Novak and the team understand clearly that in order to come and play the Australian Open, you'll need to be fully vaccinated. And they know that it's a condition for everyone, not just the players, but the fans and all the staff. And he has indicated that it's a private decision for him. And at the right time, he will tell us. And I know that he wants to play it. He's clearly indicated that.
Novak Djokovic has won 9 titles, including the last 3 at the Australian Open, and is currently tied with Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal for a record 20 men's Grand Slams. Rafa Nadal has confirmed he will compete in Australia. However, Roger Federer will miss the tournament to continue his recovery from a 3rd knee surgery. The qualifying round for next year's Australian Open tournament is set to begin on January 10th, and the main event will run from January 17th through the 30th in Melbourne. And that is all from me, Sonny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. Finally, the Portland Timbers will host New York City FC in Major League Soccer's championship match on December 11th. In the conference finals over the weekend, Portland defeated Real Salt Lake 2-0, and New York City beat the Philadelphia Union 2-1. And And that wraps up the December 6th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sunny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.